All right, for a message this morning. If I told you I'm going to speak about something this morning that women are generally good at and men are generally bad at, what would you think of? Any thoughts? That's a good answer. That's not quite it. If I told you we're going to read out of Genesis chapter 11, what would you guess? You can turn to that if you want to. We're going to talk about communication. I don't know why I struggled with a title for this message. I thought about just calling it communication. I thought about godly communication. Finally settled on effective communication. So it could have a lot of titles, but that was what we're going to go with. Genesis chapter 11, we're going to read verses 1 through 9. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass that as they journeyed from the east, and they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, "Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, "Go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. Let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, "Behold, the people is as one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore the name of it is called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. All right, it's the story of the Tower of Babel. We all know that story. Built by a man named Nimrod. He was a mighty man by all accounts, and he was the great-grandson of Noah. If you look back in chapter 10, verse 9, it says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. He was probably a large man that was a good shot with his bow. He knew how to recruit people also. He was probably a good talker. He probably was what we would call a slick salesman. He wasn't a man to model our life after. His name stands for rebel or rebellion. It's rumored through some ancient Jewish texts or the Apocrypha, however you want to look at that, that he wore a necklace with the image of a furnace on it, meaning, "Follow me or I will purge you from the earth, or else I will warp you into doing my will." I was talking with Jason this a little bit this morning. I'm not trying to preach out of the Apocrypha. I don't know exactly how much I should state as truth out of the Apocrypha. So whatever I'm saying, I don't want to come across as I believe this is undoubtedly true or anything like that. But the Apocrypha does have a way of linking some Bible stories together and maybe giving you a little more of a background. In the book of Jasher, in the Apocrypha, it would state there that Nimrod challenged God to a fight and took 3 days to prepare an army to fight the Lord. What a crazy guy. I mean, who would do that? And it would say in there that he got whooped by a host of gnats. Isn't that interesting? God, if that's so, God would have used some of the smallest creatures on the planet to whoop up on Nimrod's army. And it also says one went up Nimrod's nose and caused him a pain for 40 years. Now, I don't know. I don't want to preach that as truth, but it's an interesting thought. It also says that Nimrod got killed by Esau. And like I say, I don't know where all... I'm not preaching that's what happened, but it's interesting. Y'all remember when Esau came charging in from hunting and he sold his birthright and he said, give me something to eat, I'm fixing to die anyway. Well, it was supposed that right at that time was when he had killed Nimrod and two of Nimrod's friends that were with him out in the field. And that's when he came running back to the tent. He was scared Nimrod's army was going to come after him anyway. Very likely they were. And he thought he was going to die, so why not sell my birthright? So anyway, that's just kind of a few things I found interesting as I was studying this. But anyway, Nimrod founded four cities. He was a builder. And it says in chapter 10, verse 10, the names of the cities, and it says that was only the beginning of his kingdom. Nimrod wanted to be a great guy. And notice his persuasive powers in chapter 11, verses 3 and 4. He says, hey, let's make some bricks. Now, if I was trying to persuade y'all this morning to, let's say I wanted to build a deck on my house, and I wanted help, would I come to y'all and say, hey, let's just go buy a bunch of boards at Home Depot for the fun of it? Is that the way I go about it? Probably not. I'd probably paint you a pretty picture of, hey, y'all like grilled steak, don't you? Well, you know what? If I had a deck and a nice fall evening and a grill, we could all have a party on my back deck and y'all could come over and we could grill back there, but I need a deck first, so let's go buy boards. Do you see? That's a little different than saying, let's go buy boards. Well, here he said, let's build brick and burn them thoroughly. He started with that. That's kind of weird. And then he said, let us build a tower that the top may reach heaven. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but since he started that away, I kind of tend to think he's probably a slick talker that knew how to warp people to do what he wanted, and he had ways of powers of persuasion that I wouldn't have. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but just something to think about. And why a tower? Why a tall building? There probably was no other tall buildings back in that day. And there's a lot of speculation as to why a tower. He was the great-grandson of Noah. Maybe he heard Noah's stories of the flood of the earth, and he was trying to build above it. It does say they settled in a plain, so maybe it was for flood protection. There's a lot of speculation on that. But one thing is sure, that he and his group of people were a proud people, and they were trying to build a socialist utopia. They did not want to spread out through the earth as God had commanded them. They wanted one spot that made an impression to all of mankind and showed their power. And they said, let us make a name. And notice in verse 5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower high and show everybody how big they were, and God still had to come down to see it. Isn't that interesting? Us mankind can do the best we can, and God still has to come down to see it. Verse 6 and 7, God understands that when we communicate effectively, we humans are capable of stunning accomplishments for good and evil. God realized that there was one language. They all knew what each other was saying. And he knows that we are capable of stunning things if we communicate, if we have the power to communicate among ourselves. In this case, it was a case of evil, and God decided to fix the problem. And today, we are still struggling with language barriers all over the world. Do you ever think about all the work that goes into language translation? And I think Burton and the twins would know some of that from Guatemala work. And I know Wimford's there's some language barriers over there in Africa. All this work, because we can't all speak the same language. God doesn't want everybody to be able to easily communicate on a global level because he knows men tend towards evil and are capable of horrible and unholy things when they band together. And God picked a very effective way of breaking up the Tower of Babel. You know, it must have been real discouraging to go to work that next day. I mean, one day you're all one big happy bunch of workers, and the next day it is, you ask for a hammer and they hand you a brick. I mean, how are you going to do anything? A year and a half ago, we were in when we went to Africa. Wimford's took us on a safari, we went back in the jungle to a camp. Spent a couple days there. Very interesting place. But in the mornings, they'd take you out on these little jeeps to look at the animals, and we'd stand around there in the morning waiting for the drivers to come and for the loads to come. And there was people from all over the world there. And I was trying to be nice one morning, and there's a Chinese guy there, and there wasn't anything going. So I thought, well, I'll talk with this chap. So I said, hey, how are you? And he had a very strong accent. I almost could not understand him, but he knew English, kind of. And I said, so where are you from? And he looked at me, and I declare he said, made in China. And I was like, this boy has a sense of humor. Chinese man telling me made in China. And I looked at him, and I kind of laughed, and I said, made in China? He said, no, mainland China. I said, oh, mainland. And then he caught on to what I thought he said, and he had a sense of humor, thankfully, and he chuckled also. But you see, we're still struggling today with this language barrier that we have. Now, on a country and a state and a city and a church and family and spouse level, we have to communicate effectively or we will become very frustrated. It seems like if you look back in history, things grew fast when people learned how to communicate. Just a few ancient ways people used to communicate in the early days of America. Ships would come across from England or wherever bringing goods to American stores, stuff that they couldn't produce ourselves over here. And so they had these rowers. I'm not sure what they called them, but there's these guys in these little boats. They would paddle furiously out to the ships, get a list of what's on the ship, and then paddle furiously back to shore, and then they could tell their store owners what this ship is hauling, and the store owners knew, let's say the ship was bringing a load of shoes and they still had a bunch of shoes in stock, they could lower their shoe prices and get rid of shoes before all these other shoes flooded the market. Do you see what I'm saying? That was one way they communicated. Word didn't travel faster than a horse could run. I mean, that was about as fast as news could travel. There's a few Indians maybe that had drums, but that was a very crude way of communicating. I remember reading about that in school. I think there's some tribes in Africa that communicated through drum. And then came the Pony Express. That was a revolutionary time in America. The Pony Express. They went from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento, California. The route they took was about 1,800 miles long, and it took about 10 days to send a letter out west. They could deliver mail faster than ever before. The fastest time that they delivered a letter was Abe Lincoln's inaugural address, and they did that route in 7 days and 17 hours. That's pretty fast on a horse. Then along came the invention of the telegraph, and Pony Express is irrelevant anymore. It was not needed. Then came the telephone, and you could hear a voice. Then we got computers and email and fax and internet, and now we can communicate like never before. Isn't it amazing? I was talking with one of my friends in another country yesterday. Easy. WhatsApp and the ways we can link and connect, it's great. Facebook. I know we don't have Facebook here, but ever wonder why it's so popular? It's a method of communication. And it's obviously been a tremendous success. Anytime people can communicate easier, it usually works. We're communicating in ways today our grandparents would have never dreamed of. They would have been stunned if they'd have seen all the ways we can communicate today. And yet we still struggle to understand each other. Why is it we have all these ways in which news can travel, and yet on a one-to-one level where it really matters, we still struggle? Don't feel bad. Jesus was the best teacher in the world, and yet his disciples sometimes had trouble understanding. You don't have to turn to it, but John chapter 16, it was before the crucifixion, and he was trying to tell his disciples some of the things that they were going to go through and face. John 16, verse 7 says, "Then said some of his disciples among themselves, 'What is this that he saith to us? A little while, and you shall not see me. And again a little while, and you shall see me, because I go to the Father.' Then said they, therefore, 'What is this that he saith? A little while. We cannot tell what he saith.'" And then if you look at that chapter, Jesus explains again what he was trying to say. And obviously he made it clear that time, because John 16:29 says, "His disciples said unto him, 'Lo, now thou speakest plainly, and speaketh no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and needeth not that any man should ask thee.'" Sometimes we just, like Jesus, we need to clarify ourselves and make ourselves a little clearer. All right, we're going to go in this next section. I have several different... Okay, we're going to start with communicating with public, to the public. And then I have on communicating with children, communicating with church brethren, and your spouse. So communicating with the public, people we meet on a day-to-day basis, or not day-to-day, but through our work life, through our shopping in town life. The first point I have is something I don't think we have a problem with here, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's in the Bible, and that is no foul language ever. James 5:12 says, "But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your yea, nay, nay, lest ye fall into condemnation." I've met people in my work life and other places too that have claimed the blood of Christ in their life, and they claim him as their Lord and Savior. But you talk to them in the middle of the week, and you wouldn't know it by the language and the words that they use. And it's a repulsive thing, and it's something I'm glad we don't have a problem with here. God bless y'all for that. But it's something we Christians can ruin our reputation with very quickly, is when we use foul language. And I've noticed an even more disturbing trend, and I don't know why it is, but there's women in the community that will use foul language. And I don't know why, but for some reason it seems even more repulsive than when a man does. And I just want to thank y'all that I don't worry about coming to church and hearing foul language. And I can meet y'all in the middle of the week, and I don't have to worry about that. Thank y'all for that. Ephesians 5:4 says, "Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks." And Colossians 3:8 says, "But now put off all these things, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, and filthy communication out of your mouth." That's what God said. I didn't say it. God said that. Number two, what you do, we all heard the saying before, what you do is so loud I can't hear what you're saying. We need to be aware of the fact that the world is more interested in how we live our lives than what we say. Let's suppose this morning that you go on a trip and you have a neighbor that says he loves you, And he says he loves you and your family. And he says it all the time. But when you go on a trip, he sneaks around your house. He steals your chickens and he throws rocks through your windows. And you have another neighbor that you can pretty much tell he doesn't really care for Mennonites. He can handle us, but we're not really his favorite people on the planet. But he's cordial and he agrees to do your chores when you're out of town. And you come home and he says, "Oh, I was in your garage getting your cat food, and I noticed water running out of the door, underneath the door. So I checked it out, and your hot water heater was leaking, and I called the plumber, and I had it repaired, and here's the bill. I'd like to be reimbursed, if you don't mind." Which neighbor would you think loved you the most? The one that says he loves you all the time, but his actions didn't line up with what he's saying? Or the one that doesn't really care for you, but he took care of your animals and your water leak? Do you see how actions speak louder than words? That's just something to remember. Number three that I have on communicating with public: look people in the eye when you're talking to them. I know some of us might get squeamish just staring people in the eye when we look at them, but it's an important thing. I've been on sales lots already, and the salesmen come out to talk to me, and you know, they just kind of, they shuffle around and they look down, and they can't look at you, and you can't just look at people in the face. We used to watch a little boy that every now and then that is being raised by his grandma, and wasn't a Mennonite little boy, but his grandma was very diligent in making sure that when he talked to you, he looked at you in the face, looked at you in the eye. And that's a good thing I think we can learn. Don't be, if you can't look somebody in the eye, look at them in the forehead. At least you can, they're not going to be able to tell the difference. But just, you know what I mean, be cordial, don't be squeamish. It's not that big of a deal. People can tell pretty quick if you're not interested in their life by your actions. All right, last point on communicating with the public: don't talk just about yourself. Have you ever come away from a conversation and you thought, you know what, I know everything about that human and he never asked one question about my life? You know what, that's all right, but it kind of comes off as a little bit, I don't know. There's more to life than just you. It's a communication. It's a conversation. Talk. It goes both ways. Don't just talk about yourself. All right, communicating with children. That's hard, especially if you have a 2-year-old. You don't know what all they understand. You don't know what all they grasp. It's safe to say it's a lot more than what we think. But we don't know what all makes a connection. So number one, be as clear as possible, especially the younger they are. They don't want to know, they don't want to have half instructions. They just want to be told what to do. So tell them. They want boundaries. They need boundaries. Remember, you're the parents, so let's be in control. That's hard when you have a 2-year-old to be in control, because they know a lot. But you know what? I've discovered my 2-year-old isn't real capable of making a lot of wise decisions. And my problem is I don't want to be a dictator over my family. But when they're as young as mine, I can't speak to 8-year-olds and 14-year-olds because I don't have any of those yet. But on my 2-year-old, he needs boundaries and he needs to know and be told what to do. Remember, to be unclear with them is to be unkind with them. And that works for adults too. Don't provoke to wrath. Ephesians 6:4, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Seems like Paul knew this could be a dad problem. We dads have, I like to have fun with my boy. I like to tease probably more than I should. And that's not all bad, it's not all wrong, but we don't know exactly how they look at the world, and when we're teasing them, it can quickly turn into making them mad if we're not very careful. They don't know that they think if you pop their balloon, it's maybe the last balloon in the world. They don't know. You know what I mean? So I think us fathers need to be a little careful with that. I think Paul knew exactly what he was talking about when he wrote, not provoking your children to wrath. And the last point I have on that is take time. We all know the saying, children, spell love, T-I-M-E. That's very true. And we're all busy, every last one of us, especially summertime, and it's easy to think we don't have time. We need to make time, because one of these days, Lord willing, my boy's going to be growing up and he's going to be leaving the house, and there is no way I can go back and spend more time with him in his growing up years. We won't miss the extra time we took, maybe an hour off of work, maybe a day off of work. You're not going to miss that 20 years from now. Take time for your family. And that's hard for me, because I think I have to go to work, and we got bills to pay. We still got a mortgage to pay off. I got to get onto this. And it's easy to get in the rut of, I better stay at work and get my bills paid for instead of, and that's true to a certain point, but we need to be careful we don't deprive our children of our time. They need you, fathers. They really do. All right, moving on to communicating with church brethren. The first point I have here is go to the meetings. Men's meetings, I'll tell y'all, I'm not much of a meetings guy. I'll just stay at home and sit on my easy chair, and it's a lot easier not to get dressed up and go anywhere. But meetings are important. We get together and we talk about what we're going to do. How do y'all want to handle situations? It seems like a lot of times if you hear about church problems or church splits, it's a breakdown of communication at some level, whether it's amongst the ministry, whether it's amongst church brethren. It seems like that's where a lot of it starts or stems from. So come to the meeting and share. That's what the meeting's for. And that's easy for me. I tell you what, it's easier for me just to sit there with my mouth shut. I'm kind of like Abraham Lincoln. He said, I'm going to mess this quote up now. I didn't write it down. Something about rather remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And about the time I figured that out, that it's good for me to keep my mouth shut, along comes the ordination, and now I have to stand up here for 30 minutes and talk to y'all. But we need brethren communication. We need that in the meetings. So come to the meeting. And y'all do very good at that. I'm not saying that in a judgmental way at all. I'm saying this for myself. Number two, speak clearly and don't beat around the bush. I'm not very good at reading between the lines, so just say what's on your mind. And we want to know what's on your mind as a church. We need the input of the brethren. Number three, listen to people. Just like when we like people to listen to us, we must be willing to listen to others. Every man is right in his own eyes, but there has to be giving and taking in church life. And that's why we have meetings. That's why we have Sunday school class and church life and church functions. We live in a culture, especially you see it today, you see it more in the political world, where one side, it can't even talk to the other side. Sometimes I think that drifts into church a little more than it should. The whole cancel culture thing out there right now, that listen to somebody if they're on a different side than you are. That's not the way church life is supposed to be. We're supposed to have an open, honest discussion with each other. Just because we don't see eye to eye with somebody doesn't mean we can't talk to them. And I have discovered already that sometimes when we disagree with people and you actually talk to those people, you figure out you actually have the same goal. You might just have a little different way about going about reaching that goal. And sometimes if you just have that conversation, you solve a lot of problems. When we don't talk, we start assuming, and then things go downhill from there. So just something to keep in mind. All right. Communication with spouse. This one might be a tough one. I don't know. There's a lot of different surveys out on men and women and communication and the words we use. One survey said men speak approximately 7,000 words per day, and women speak approximately 20,000 words today with bursts of up to 47,000. Other surveys say no, men and women speak about the same amount of words a day. So I don't know which survey's right. You can find about anything you want. But it's safe to say men and women communicate very differently, and women are usually better communicators than men. I think us men would probably, if we could get by with it, just communicate with grunts and sign language, because sometimes we just don't say more than we absolutely have to. And women, on the other hand, seem to use every verb in the book that they can conjure up. And there's a side to both ditches. There is a side to both ditches, but it's probably safe to say that the women are better at this than us men. So how do we communicate with our spouse? What's the procedure? I have several points here on this. Number one, go on a date. We, as a man, when we were younger, we made time to date our girlfriend. You better believe we did. Make time to date your wife. It's hard, especially in the stage of life I'm in right now with a baby. But yesterday, Grandma came and watched the boys for a little bit. Me and my wife went to town for a couple hours. That's a blessing. It's a wonderful time. Figure it out. If you have to swap child care, if you have to pay for a babysitter, one of the youth girls or something, do it. It'd be well worth the time you spend. It doesn't have to be a long, fancy weekend getaway. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It can be. The goal is just to spend time with your spouse. Just talk. Did you ever see these couples that in the community that look like they have a pretty happy marriage and they have 3 or 4 children? The children grow up, the last one leaves the house, and the parents divorce. It's sad, but it happens. I've seen it happen way too close to people I knew in this community. And why is that? I think it's because the parents focus on the children, and the hustle and the bustle of life and the humdrum and you know, you don't spend much time with your spouse, and then the children leave and boom, you don't even know your spouse anymore. Because you hadn't spent time with them. Don't do that. Don't do that to your spouse. Take time for your spouse. There is such a thing as focusing too much on your children and not taking the time for your wife or husband. All right, point number two. Men, just listen. Why is that hard to do? In my experience, your wife probably doesn't need her problem solved as much as she does someone just to listen to her. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason, so just listen. Most of our wives are stuck at home with our children all day long, and sometimes when I come home from work, they just want to talk. And talk to them. Listen to them. They want to know sometimes what I think is every crazy little detail of my day. And it's not that my wife is nosy. She just been stuck in the house all day. She wants to know what's going on out in the real world. So tell them. You don't have anything to hide. Just tell them. Talk to them. For you women, I don't know how women think, but women, I put down here, women don't nag and don't beat around the bush when asking. And men, if your wife asks you to do something, be willing to do it. It's most of us men, if y'all are like me, I don't mind doing little projects for my wife, but just ask me bluntly, tell me bluntly what you want done, and I'll go do it. I don't need a whole lot of explanation why you want it done. I don't need a lot of, but don't, if you husbands are like me, I don't like to have to read between the lines what my wife wants done. And she don't have to tiptoe around what she wants done. Just say what you want done, wives, and your husband will probably help you out. Point number three on communicating with your spouse. Do a will. You talk about making your think as a married couple is do a will together. Not to mention the side fact that everybody here needs a will, and I'm going to, as your deacon, harp on all of y'all until y'all get a will done. Everybody 18 years or older needs a will. Anyway, but sitting down, talking about the welfare of your children, your assets, what you want done after you die, that's a good way to draw a husband and a wife together, and it's something that needs to be done. I know when I sat in that lawyer's office and I had to confront my own mortality and I had to talk with my wife about where the children were going to go and how this is going to all work if both of us die, that's good for you. It's not comfortable, but it's good for you to do. Everybody needs a will. Go do one if you don't have one. And the other thing is, we live in what seems like an ever left-leaning government. And I know we live in the Bible Belt of Arkansas, and the chance of this happening is pretty small. But if me and my wife both die, and I don't have a will, and it goes to court, and if there's a judge there that thinks maybe the Mennonite life is restrictive, or maybe we live too much of a cult lifestyle, and they decide to toss my children in the foster care system because I didn't take this time when I was alive on this earth to say what I want done with my children, that's not a chance I'm willing to take, and it's not a chance you should be willing to take either. And like I say, that's a pretty small chance that's going to happen, but it can. And the way the world's going nowadays, I'm not taking the chance. So go do a will. It'll draw you together as a husband and a wife. All right, the last point I have for husband and wife communication. Do a budget together every month. I know when we had a marriage seminar, I talked about this some, so y'all might hear a repeat of this. I don't know. And by the way, Tony had the communication side of that. I really wish I could have heard that. I think that was right over the time we went to Africa, so I don't think they recorded it, so I couldn't go listen to it. But do a budget together every month. It forces you to talk about long-term and short-term goals. Sometimes us men think we are the breadwinners of the house, and most of us are. And so that means we get to handle all the money, right? Wife don't get any say-so. That's not how it works. If your wife's at home taking care of your children, and she has your last name, she has every right to every dollar you earn. And she gets just as much of a say-so in it as what I do. So give your wife room to talk into your monthly budget. Maybe, I know for me and my wife, my wife is better with numbers than I am. She can make things work out better than I can. But we both talk about it. We both talk about where the money's going to go and which bills we're going to pay. And we figure it out. It forces communication. And it's good for the marriage. Maybe the husband's the number guy. Maybe he wants to do the math and the nitty-gritty stuff, but there's no reason for your wife not to at least look over it. I've discovered there's a wealth of wisdom in a godly, God-fearing woman. It seems like God put almost an intuitive wisdom in a godly wife and mother, or any woman for that matter, but I've noticed it especially in my wife. There's a sense of stability and wisdom that sometimes us men lack a little bit. We're a little more risk takers, and we don't mind risk quite as much as our wives maybe. So get your wife's input. I love Proverbs 31:11, talking about a wife, "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so he shall have no need of spoil." And that need of spoil, some people would interpret it as no lack of gain. Spoils refers to abundant profits. He has no need of that if he has a godly wife. And I'm very blessed to have a godly wife, just like many of you men are. So take time to listen to your wife. Let her put her input in. All right, we're going to wrap this up. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." The tongue's a powerful thing if we use it wisely, if we communicate wisely. And it's a very destructive thing if you don't use it wisely. I'm going to close with a quote here. I'm not even sure who wrote this quote. It says, "Listen with curiosity, speak with honesty, act with integrity." The greatest problem with communication is we don't listen to understand. We listen to reply. When we listen with curiosity, we don't listen with the intent to reply. We listen for what's behind the words. So just think about that as you go through this week. God bless each one of y'all. There's a lot I can learn from y'all, and there's a lot of wise people in this congregation that have this topic down pat compared to where I'm at, and there's a lot I can learn from y'all. Why don't we kneel for prayer?